We had a couple of weeks off, and now I'm happy to be back, starting again with our series on Pirkei Avos. We started on this journey a number of months ago, trying to get through the lessons of Pirkei Avos, and somehow we're still in the very first parak of Pirkei Avos, because there's so much to talk about, and so much to learn. Like my father once told me, it's a school of Arichas Yamim. We'll be learning this forever. So, by way of introduction to today's discussion, I just want to look at a beautiful passage in the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim. Mesilas Yesharim was written by one of the greatest Jewish philosophers in the 1700s, by the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, and he writes in his Sefer Mesilas Yesharim about the importance of a human being learning how to spend time alone. And it's a very important concept, because we live in a very busy world, and we live in a very connected world. And it's not such a bad thing that every once in a while we get to spend time alone. I was thinking a lot about this as I spent 2 weeks, I wasn't alone, but I was away from my regular place and my regular home. And it gives you time just to think more about aspects of life that maybe you don't think about, especially when my phone wasn't working up there, and when I wasn't really receiving emails as quickly as I normally do, and text message for sure didn't come through. And it's a nice opportunity to just sit and think and to use your mind a little bit to consider and contemplate aspects of life. So says the Ramchal, Yoker min akol, hu ha-hisbodedus. Some people have a mistaken impression. They think that Rab Nachman Mibreslov is the one who made up this concept. It's not. It's a very age-old concept of hisbodedus, which means every so often we need to make time for ourselves. And I really believe that the summer, when things are a little bit lighter in our schedules, it's an opportunity for us to think more about this concept, about trying to be alone. Maybe those who have children who are off in camp, maybe those who have just lighter work schedules or whatever it might be, we have an opportunity really just to think more and to be alone and to try to be comfortable with ourselves. Says the Ramchal, Ki kemosha meser me'ena v'nyanei ha'olam. It's an opportunity for a person to unwind and to detach a little bit, to separate themselves from all the busyness and the craziness sometimes that goes on in the world. Ki mavir chamdasa milibo. We have sometimes an incessant urge, an impulse to be involved and to be updated in everything that goes on all the time and to know instantly when it goes on and how to react to it and how to respond. And says the Ramchal, every so often it's not a bad idea just to take a step back and to learn to be comfortable with yourself. And he proves this from the Nevi'im. And he writes, why is it that so often in Tanakh you find stories about Elisha HaNavi, Eliyahu HaNavi, always in the mountains? What are they doing in the mountains? Did they not live in a community? Why does the Tanakh depict their stories of these great Nevi'im spending time in the mountains? And says the Ramchal, the reason why is because they understood that in order to reach transcendence, in order to reach real virtue in life, real perfection, a person needs to sometimes find themselves in the mountains. You need to be alone. You need to be in a place where you can actually think about life and understand where you're going, where you're coming from, what is the goal, what is the objective, and you need to really recalibrate every so often and understand where it is that you're holding. So as important as that is, says the Ramchal, if you look in the second paragraph here, he qualifies the statement and he says, yes, it is important for a human being to have that ability to be alone and to think for themselves. However, he says, bitnai, shelo yate gam baze el ktzei ha'acher. Says the Ramchal, like in all things in life, it's never good to be an extreme personality. It's never good to be a radical. And says the Ramchal, that applies not only to every other aspect of life, but it applies to this as well. Don't make yourself a hermit. Don't make yourself a person that is so detached from society and civilization, that has no friends, that's always thinking to themselves and getting so caught up in their own ideas and their own goals and aspirations. Says the Ramchal, you always need to make sure that you strike that balance. Shekvar amru, because Chazal saying suvas daf yod zayin, la'olam tehe daito shel adam mu'ureves im habrios. We are human beings, and part of the human condition is that we need to be with other human beings. And therefore, says the Ramchal, it's important that we don't go to either extreme. If you're going to be too connected, if you're going to be too involved and too engaged, and never making time for yourself, never allowing yourself to think on your own and to contemplate life and to consider where you're up to, then says the Ramchal, you just get caught up with the community and you don't have self-growth. You don't have self-motivation. At the same time, if you're going to be too lost in yourself, you're not going to have the opportunity to really interact with others. And therefore, he says, it is important that we strike that balance. So there's a beautiful passage of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz was the Mashgiach, the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Mir Yeshiva. And he quotes something from a Sefer in the 1700s. I'm sure nobody in the room has ever heard of it. It's the Sefer Kuntras HaSvekus. In many yeshivas, they learn it. Not a popular Sefer to learn just on your own. But the Kuntras HaSvekus writes a very beautiful passage where he describes, imagine for a moment that God himself would invite any of us to come up with him for a day in heaven and spend a day in the life of God. That would be a nice treat. He's not going to kill you. Just going to take you for a day, allow you to travel around with him and see all that goes on, all the calculations and everything that goes on in our world, and how it works, and the reason for why everything works in the way which it does. And then after a day, you're going to come back. But there's only one caveat, there's one rule. That rule is, you are not allowed to tell anyone about your experience. Not before and not after. Now writes Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in the name of the Kuntras HaSvekus, how many human beings would still have an interest in doing that? I really think it's a good question. I really think it's a good question. Meaning in the abstract, of course we're all interested in understanding God and understanding how our world works. We all have so many questions and we have issues that we'd love to really get a better understanding of. But God tells you, I'm going to show it all to you. And you're going to have this incredible opportunity, this unbelievable experience, but you cannot share it with another person in the world. Writes Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, I think most people would have no interest. Because so much of the human condition is our ability to share, is our ability to be together and to talk about experiences. And if we don't have that opportunity, sometimes the experience itself is not even worth it to many people. This is not a negative character trait, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. This is the reality of life. This is human nature. This is the way people are. And really, with that introduction, I'd like to get into our Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. You look here in number Beis, where we have a Mishnah about Nitai Har Be'eli Omer, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Zayin. The Mishnah teaches us an important lesson, which is harchek mishachein ra. One has to be careful to separate and distance themselves from negative neighbors, from those who are not living life the way they should be. Ve'al tischaber l'rasha, and do not associate, do not mingle with evil people. So he gives us a very simple piece of advice, but it sounds like it's very similar. What are these two aspects? Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that perhaps what the Mishnah here means to teach us is two different lessons. When you're choosing a neighborhood, when you're choosing a place where you would like to live, when you're choosing a school where you'd like to send your children, you're choosing whatever it might be that's going to make you connected to other people, he says, harchek mishachein ra. Make sure that you choose wisely and don't allow yourself to get close to those people who are going to have a negative impact on your life. At the same time, it says, al tischaber l'rasha, which means, let's say I choose a neighborhood, I choose a school, and over time, I have a number of children, over time the entire nature of the school changes, the nature, the fabric of the community changes, and now it's not on the level where I thought it should be. And it's not at all living by the ideals that I would have expected for my family to be living. Writes Rabbi Yaakov Emden, there as well we need to be careful to have the strength to walk away even after we've already become established in a certain place. Your moral compass has to be strong enough that you can walk away and have no problem with that and have no conscience. That, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, is a difficult challenge, but that is exactly what the Mishnah teaches us. So, that's what we're going to focus on this morning. Writes the Rambam, this is a very famous passage of the Rambam, where he describes basic human nature. And the Rambam says, again, he's not telling us it's a positive or a negative, he's just saying this is basic human nature, universally. Jew and non-Jew alike, doesn't matter where you live, this is the way people are. Derech b'yaso shel ha'adam, says the Rambam in Amar Gimel, the nature of a human being is such, lios nimshach b'deosav uvimasav achareyav v'chaveirav, that we have an inclination to be like our friends, to act like our neighbors, and to fit in with our colleagues. That is the natural tendency of people. V'noeg b'mineg anshei medinaso. And we tend to do like others do. So I watched a video a number of years ago. I cannot remember what it's called. Somebody who was at the shir last night sent me the link to it. It's funny. It's a funny video when they have these groups who do pranks. Nothing hurtful to anybody. It's just funny to watch it. So they did a prank. I forgot what the group is called. And it was amazing to watch it. It's called the Elevator Challenge. Anybody ever saw that? You can look it up online. Not the one that I see. Exactly. So the Elevator Challenge is the following. For some reason, etiquette dictates that when you walk into an elevator, you face the door. Even if you walk in this way, you turn around, you face the door. So they have this video where it's a big building with a lot of different stories, many floors. So they have a whole group of people who walk into the elevator, and instead of facing the door, they're all facing the wall. Then they go up to the next floor, and there's 20 people in the elevator all facing the wall. Next person who walks in doesn't know anything about this trick, looks around at everyone, and they have a camera installed in the elevator. So you see this woman. First she's fidgeting with her hair, then she's like trying to play with the buttons in the elevator, taking things in and out of her bag. They go up another flight, and they have these actors who come in, flight 4, 5, 6, people start walking in, every person who comes in is facing backwards. And you see how in the course of like 35 seconds, she starts moving slowly in the other direction until after a minute, she's facing the back. That's exactly what the Rambam says. It's not normal. You know that it's not normal. You know that it's not the right thing to do. And you know that when someone else walks into the elevator, you're turning your back to them. Is that the right thing to normally do? Of course not. But yet, Derech b'yaso shel ha'adam, says the Rambam, that's exactly what human nature dictates. You're in a position where everyone else around you is doing something, even though it's strange, but slowly you acclimate, and slowly you understand that that becomes the new norm. And it's amazing. It's amazing how that happens. So I was just in Camp Simcha for 2 weeks, and we just came back yesterday, laid the groundwork for Rabbi Feiner to go. It's amazing. It's there.
11 o'clock.
Okay. So one of the things that I'm extremely moved by every time is many of the campers who come up wear wigs because they don't have hair. And it's embarrassing for them not to have hair. So when they go to school and they live in their communities, they wear wigs. So much so, I was amazed this past week. It was such a lesson for me. This past week, there was a Shetelmacher in Brooklyn, who was apparently a very famous one, not my area of expertise. But she came up for an entire day on Friday to do everybody's shetels, to do all of their wigs. It was amazing. It was amazing. And I was thinking, you know, here she is using her talents, thinking creatively of how she can help other people. It was so beautiful to see it. And she sat there the entire day doing it for all these kids and making them feel so good. But what amazed me more than anything else was, after like 2 or 3 days of the kids being on the campus and spending time with 100 other kids who are in the same situation as they are, you see one after the other just pulls their wigs off. And they're no longer embarrassed. Now, for me, it was scary. Somebody comes to talk to me one day, and then the next day they show up again, and they look totally different. But that was amazing to me. And says the Rambam, that is human nature in every aspect of life. That we have people who feel uncomfortable because they're different, because they look different. But then, when you get into an environment where you're all the same, I'm no longer uncomfortable. And I can be proud of who I am, because now I'm in a comfortable environment. And that's what the Rambam writes. Therefore, he says, Lefikach tzarach adam lehischaber letzadikim. Be careful with the choices that you make, because who you choose to associate with, who you choose to spend time with, will make a big difference in the life that you live. And the Rambam says, he goes on, that you should choose carefully people who are righteous people, people who make the right decisions, people who make the right choices, kedei sheyilmod mima'aseihem. Now the truth is that this Medrash, there's a Medrash already that tries to give over this message. And the Medrash is commenting on a Pasuk in Sefer Mishlei. The Pasuk says there, Shlomo HaMelech wrote Sefer Mishlei, and he writes, Holech el chachamim yechkam. Simply translated as, somebody who travels to a smart, wise person will become smart. Now what does that mean? If you spend all day with Albert Einstein, just by diffusion, by osmosis, it's going to rub off on you. That doesn't work that way. So what does the pasuk mean? What is Shlomo HaMelech trying to teach us? Holech el chachamim yechkam. The Medrash explains as follows, if you look at number Dalet. And the Medrash says, Mashal lemisha nichnas lechanuso shabosam. I'm not an expert. I've never walked into a perfume shop. But I would imagine, says the Medrash, let's say you walk into a store and they have all kinds of perfumes. And you start looking around and you pick up this and you pick up that. And after a little while, you realize all of these are way beyond your budget and you can't afford it. So you speak to the owner of the store and it turns out there's nothing that's within your price range. So after a half an hour of smelling everything and walking around and looking at all the products, you end up walking out with nothing. Says the Medrash, Afal pi she'eino mochelo ve'eino lokeach mimenu. Even if I end up not purchasing anything, even if I end up leaving without anything in my hands, hu yotze v'recho v'rech begadav mivusamim, you're going to smell good just because you spend time in a place that smells good. And therefore the Medrash says, that's what Shlomo HaMelech means. Holech el chachamim yechkam. It doesn't mean that by osmosis, by diffusion, you're going to become a smart person. It means if you surround yourself with people who are making the right choices in life, even if unfortunately you're the kind of person that often does not have the strength to do that, very often if you spend enough time there, you'll walk out v'recho v'reach begadav mivusamim. Contrast that to a person who walks into a chanuso shel burski, somebody who walks into a blacksmith's office. Now, I've never been into such a place, but for me, the way I understand this is, I don't like ever being dirty. It's just not my thing. I don't like my hands ever being dirty. So sometimes when you walk into the car mechanic, I just don't like standing in there. I walk in, I tell him what I need, and I wait outside. Why? Because there's always grease somewhere, and there's always black that's going to get all over your hands. It's just the way it is. You stick around long enough there, and they start showing you, and this tire, that. I said, you know what, just do whatever you have to do to my car. I'll give you my credit card. I'll come pick it up. I just don't like it. Says the Medrash, that's what happens. You have somebody who walks into a chanuso shel burski, somebody who walks into one of these places where it's always dirty and their hands are always involved in things. Says the Medrash, even though you don't buy anything, even though you're not selling anything, you just spend time walking around, inevitably you're going to walk out, your hands are going to be black, there's going to be grease on them, something's going to happen. Doesn't matter how hard you try for it not to happen. And that, writes the Medrash, is what Shlomo HaMelech means, Holech el chachamim yechka. So a number of years ago I read about the astronaut Scott Kelly. He spent time on the moon in the International Space Station. It says he spent 340 days in the International Space Station, and when he came back to Earth, when he was getting out of the rocket ship, he was not able to get out by himself. He needed people to carry him out because he wasn't used to the atmosphere back here on Earth. And do you know how many days it took him to reacclimate himself to real life, the way human beings live here on Earth? Anybody know? No, not that long. It took him 45 days to reacclimate to his existence that he always had been used to for 40 years before that, which is amazing. You can grow up in this world, you can live your entire life here. All of a sudden, you go up to space for a year, your atmosphere changes, you've been training for this for years, you know exactly what's going to happen. You come back and you just need time to recalibrate yourself. All of that because our surrounding makes a tremendous impression on us, makes a big difference to the lives that we live. And the same way it was hard for him to step and to walk here back on this earth, it's hard for us sometimes to get back to our reality, to get back to our earth, to get back to our norms that we believe are the standards that our families and ourselves should be living by. Because we have an atmosphere sometimes that pulls us down. We have an atmosphere that makes us believe that this is the way life is supposed to be lived, and we know it's wrong, and we know it's not correct. And it's very difficult for us to make that decision and to make the right choice. So Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschitz, one of the greatest Rabbanim in Germany in the 1700s, and Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschitz writes a powerful statement. And he says, "Bekoach chaver hara lahashil meha'adam kalan haga tova." This is a number hey. A good friend or a bad friend has the ability to drain, to siphon out of you all your good qualities. Kal hanhaga tova. So unfortunately, I know some people who have gotten caught up in illegal behavior. I'm sure all of us have encountered that at some point in life. And I'd like to believe that many of these people are really not so evil. I don't think everybody who does something wrong is so evil. So how does it happen? Sometimes you listen to the story that these people say. I'm not saying they shouldn't be blamed. They did something wrong. You belong in jail. However, how does it start? How does it happen? Very often they'll tell you, it happens because I was an upstanding citizen, I was an honest businessman, and I had a partner and I had a friend, and they asked me to do just this little thing, a little dray here, a little dray over there, cutting corners somewhere, and you start getting used to this kind of behavior. And then your business starts going in that direction. And once you see it works once in a small way, why not try something bigger? And before you know it, you're caught up in a web of scandals. Not because you're an evil person, but because what you knew to be a upstanding individual, a person who has a moral compass, somehow because of friends, ended up in a place where you would be embarrassed. 20 years ago, you'd be ashamed of yourself if you would foresee that that was going to be you in 20 years going forward. And that is what Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes, that a friend sometimes is able to drain and siphon out of us all of the Hanhaga Tova, all that we believe to be the right thing, to be the right choices, and in the other direction. A good friend is also able to teach a person and inspire and influence them. A good friend is very important. And he ends off and he says something so powerful. Look at the end of this line, where he tells us, Amru Chazal say, Asei lecha rav, uknei lecha chaver. Asei lecha rav means you have to choose for yourself a teacher who can inspire you. Uknei lecha chaver, you should spend money, you should invest in a good friend. Now says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, why do we have this discrepancy? Why does it say to pay for a friend and choose for yourself a teacher? So my father always taught me. This was his pshat. Any rabbi who charges money for you to speak to them, stay away from them. There's something wrong. Something wrong, it's a red flag. Any rabbi you have to pay money to get into, you don't belong there. That's what he told me. I've lived by that rule. I don't go to any of these people. Maybe some people find comfort in going to them. My father taught me, stay away from all these people. Mishnah says, Asei lecha rav. Doesn't say buy yourself a rabbi. It says, Asei lecha rav. Choose somebody who has an outstanding moral compass. And if they're charging you money, you have to wonder. That's what my father told me. Okay, says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. Why does it say, Knei lecha chaver? Because he says, a good friend is more important than an inspiring teacher. And he ends off the statement by saying, Ho, the chaver hatov pearl yoser me'asara rabbanim. What a good friend can do for us is sometimes even more powerful than 100 rabbis, than 100 teachers. Because a good friend knows us better. A good friend understands us very well. A good friend knows our challenges, knows our weaknesses. What does it mean when the Torah says that a healthy marriage is supposed to be Ezer Kenegdo? It doesn't mean you're always fighting. That's not what Ezer Kenegdo means. And Ezer means you're supposed to be helpful to each other, and Kenegdo means you're supposed to be against each other. So what does that mean? A healthy relationship is one where you obviously work together toward similar and common goals, aspirations, but at the same time, it should be a person that you're comfortable with pointing out your flaws. It's not an offense against you. It's not an attack. It's your best friend. And sometimes your best friend who knows you better than anybody else is the only person who can really say something to you in a way that you can accept it, in a way that you can understand it, because you know that they're really looking out for your own good. You know they have no ulterior motives. That's what it means, Ezer Kenegdo. That you're supposed to be working together, but part of working together is that sometimes you need to point out something negative in the other person's behavior, in the other person's personality, in the choices that they make. That's the greatest friend. And says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, that sometimes that good friend, if you're lucky enough to have them, is able to do more for you than 100 teachers. You could spend a whole life being inspired by all kinds of people and makes no impact on you, because those people don't really know you. A good friend is the one that really understands you, that really knows you. So one of the great Bali Machshava in the last 100 years was Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. the Michtav Me'Eliyahu. It's a beautiful set of Svarim, writes about very interesting concepts. And in the first volume of the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, it's five or six volumes, I think. In the first volume of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, he has two or three pages about Hashpas Hasviva, where he talks about the influence from our surroundings. And in there he writes the following, and I think it's a very important passage, number Vav. B'nei Adam Choshvim, many people think, Shehashpas Hasviva Osa Roshim Chashuv. They think that the Hashpa, that the influence of their surrounding, of their circumstance, makes an impression, Rak Al Yeladim V'Chalushei Hadas. They think it makes an impression only on those people who are weak, who are fragile, who are flimsy, who are impressionable. So we're very careful with our friends, with the friends that our children choose to spend time with. Because my child is very impressionable, he's a very young child. And you never know what's going to happen if he chooses the wrong friends. But says the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, as adults, we don't understand that we are just as impressionable. And as careful as we are for our children to try to guide them in choosing carefully, as careful as we are for our children to give them sage advice on who it is that they should associate with and who they should stay away from, writes the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, how often do we think for ourselves as adults that also there are people who we need to stay away from? And there are people who we should not be associating with. And he says, Ein okein, it's not correct, because hasviva oseroshim afilu alachi gadol. Our environment can make an impression on us, even if we are confident, capable, steady human beings, who are very firm in the way that we think, in the way that we act, in all that we do. Says the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, it's so easy for an adult to fall into that trap as well. And in some way, he says, it's easier for an adult because we don't think about it. We think, I'm safe, I'm good, I'm okay. It's not going to happen to me. And you look around at friends over years and you see it happens to all of us. What we thought would never happen happens to all of us in many different aspects, in many different ways, but it happens to everyone. So there's a fascinating passage in the Rambam. The Gemara in the very end of Maseches Ksubos talks about the laws that govern a marriage. The very end of Maseches Ksubos talks about what happens when, unfortunately, a couple needs to get divorced. So they're incompatible. Now, obviously, the husband obligated himself at the time of the marriage that should we ever get divorced, I am obligating myself to pay you a ksuba. That's the way all Jewish marriages work. But there are certain cases, says the Gemara, if you can prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that it was the woman's fault for the destruction of this marriage, and the Gemara gives a number of examples. If it was clearly the woman's fault that this marriage fell apart, then she forfeits her right to the ksuba. So it's unusual that that happens. How can you ever prove it's him or her? It's just normally not the case. Normally it turns out they're just not for each other after some time. But the Gemara gives a number of examples. One of them I've always found to be surprising. So the Gemara says, what happens? We have a family, we're living here in Woodmere, and we're having a beautiful life, and we're sending our children to the local schools, and we're very happy there, and we're going to daven in all the local shuls, and we're very happy, and we have great friends. Everything's wonderful. Life is perfect. We have a great marriage. Everything's really going well. Poo-poo. One fine day, the husband comes home, he says, you know, there was a nefesh b'nefesh meeting in shul this morning. And I was inspired by it. I'd like to make aliyah. His wife turns to him and says, are you out of your mind? Make aliyah? Don't you see everything's going perfectly well? You're going to uproot the whole family, move them to Israel. Now we're going to have to make new friends, buy a new house, find new schools, reinvent the wheel. We're going to have to learn Hebrew. Just not right now. Let's hold off another 20 years. Let's get the kids out of the house. Let's hold off. I'm happy to do it. Just let's hold off. Nope. I absolutely want to go. And they start fighting about it, and they're not getting anywhere. She's adamant that it's the best thing for our family to stay here. He says, I'd like to make aliyah. Well, you'd like to make aliyah, you're on your own. Okay, so they get divorced. I shouldn't talk about this so casually, but I'm just saying a hypothetical situation. So they get divorced, and he moves off on his own to Israel, and she stays behind with the whole family. Says the Gemara, who's at fault for destroying that marriage? Who? All those who say the woman's at fault for destroying the marriage, raise your hand. All those who say the man is at fault for destroying the marriage, raise your hands. Now, I would have said the man too. We had a very healthy marriage. Everything was going well. You decided you woke up on the wrong side of the bed one day. I shouldn't say that. It's the right side of the bed. You decided you want to move to Israel. So, that's your problem. Says the Gemara, no. Whichever spouse, husband or wife, does not agree to move to Eretz Yisrael is at fault for destroying the marriage. That's what the Gemara says. And if the woman is the one who doesn't want to go along, she forfeits her right to her ksuba. And in the opposite direction as well. What if a woman wakes up one day and says, you know, I'm really feeling the urge, I really feel we should move. And the husband says, you're out of your mind. I have a business here, I have everything here. I'm not comfortable, I don't want to move. I don't want to go there. I don't speak Hebrew. And therefore they decide to get divorced. And she runs off on her own to Eretz Yisrael, he stays here. Says the Gemara, she has every right to a ksuba because she's doing the right thing. And the husband should have figured out how to make himself available to go along with her. Now again, there are a million and one factors in trying to figure this out. And in a healthy marriage, I would hope that a couple is able to not have to get divorced over this and actually work it through and make a plan. But, says the Gemara in the abstract, that would be the halacha. So sometimes it's counterintuitive. The way it seems is not always the way the halacha looks at it. But that's the way the halacha goes. So the Rambam gives us another example. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, those are the laws that govern marriage and divorce. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishus, did I put it on here? No, I forgot. So the Rambam writes the following. Ha'isha amar eini dar b'mader hazeh. A man wakes up one day. You've been living in a community for 25 years, everything's wonderful, and you're involved in your community, and you've gotten so many great things from living here. And one fine day, the man stands up and he says, you know, we moved in here 25 years ago and the community was of a certain type. And now, the spiritual level of this community has been lowered over the last 25 years. I'm no longer comfortable living here. I'm not happy with the people that have moved in onto the block. I'm not happy with how this community has turned out. I know we've been here for a long time and we paid off the mortgage already and everything's wonderful, but I'm just not comfortable. His wife turns to him and says, what do you mean? We're 60 years old already. You think this is going to make an impression on us? Let's just live out life here. Everything's fine. Everything's comfortable. We figured our way around. We like it here. And the husband is adamant. No, we cannot be here. Because what this community has turned into, not this one, but what this abstract community has turned into, is not in line with the ideals of what we want our family to be living by. Says the Rambam, who's at fault for destroying that marriage? And the Rambam says, you have a right to have such a claim. You have a right to have such a claim. And you have a right to demand that your family move out. Now again, it has to be reasonable. It's not just because some little thing happened. You have to have reasonable cause to allow for such a thing. But the Rambam says, if somebody has a claim that I don't want to live here because we're surrounded by people who are having a negative influence on us, he or she, either one, has every right to demand that the spouse go along with it. And it's a fascinating Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, I know it's scary to think that we're almost up to Hilchos Tshuva. You know, we were in camp for 2 weeks, and I always, by the orientation, I always impress upon the girls that I'm so inspired by the stories of so many of these campers and the struggles that they go through and the emunah that they have and the strength that they live by, and so many of them are young children. It always amazes me, and I sit there the whole summer taking notes. I write things down. Many campers come to talk to me and I write down very impressive things that they share with me. And I encourage the girls to do the same thing. You know, your campers are going to share things with you that you'll be inspired by. And don't laugh it off. Don't think just because your camper is 5 or 6 years old that you can't learn from them. There's a lot to learn from young children. And I made mention of this to one of the staff members a few days ago. I said, you know, before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, take out whatever it is that you wrote down. And it will give you a very different perspective on life. Give you a very different perspective of what you should be praying for this year, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. When you think about what these kids live through and how lucky you are and the real essence of life, and the real decisions that have to be made in life, it will just give you a very different perspective. And she turned to me and said, why are you talking about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? I said, because it's right around the corner. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is not so far off. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva. Rambam says there are chamisha dvarim. There are five things that somebody who does them, it's very difficult to do tshuva for those transgressions, for those averus. Why? The Rambam says, because nidmelo, because it seems to me in my mind that I'm not even doing something wrong. So the Rambam gives a few examples. One example that he gives is hachoshed b'ksherim. What does it mean to be choshed b'ksherim? It means that I accuse somebody of doing something wrong. Now that doesn't mean that I go up to them in their face and say, why did you do this? You know, that's not the normal way that we speak to people. But I read an article in the newspaper and I believe it. And I now walk around thinking that this person is an evil person. Now I can tell you, growing up in the house that I did and having a father who's attacked in the newspapers all the time, I was living that story. I was living the real story. I knew what really happened in our home. I knew what my father really may have said or not said. And then I know how the newspapers distorted his words and created a story to make him look terrible. Happened to me many times. I'm very aware of this. And because of that, I became very sensitive to when you read an article, don't believe everything that you read. You got to be a fool to believe everything that you read. Their job is to sell newspapers. Our job is to sometimes give people the benefit of the doubt. Because very often, whatever is being reported is inaccurate. So this aspect of choshed b'ksherim happens to us all the time, and especially today when we have instant media and we get news stories from all over the world and we read things and we pass judgment without looking into anything. We don't know the details, we don't know the facts, and we're so quick to judge and we're so quick to make an evaluation without really looking deeper beyond the surface of whatever it is that's being reported. Says the Rambam, it's very hard to do tshuva for that. You know why? Because you convince yourself, I didn't even do anything wrong. I didn't act upon my accusation. I didn't go to the person's owner of their business, to their employer. I didn't say, you know, you're working with an evil person, you should fire them. I would never do that. It's just something that I feel. It's something that I think. I've passed a judgment on another human being for no reason at all. For no justifiable reason at all. Says the Rambam, something like that is very difficult to do tshuva for. And the Rambam goes through a bunch of examples. Then the Rambam says, there are five things that somebody who gets into a cycle of behaving in this way, kashim heim lifrosh mehem, it is very difficult to step away from such behavior. So number one, he says, rechilus lashon hara, if you're involved in talking idle chatter and talking about other people, it's very hard to get out of that cycle. After all, we're all human beings. And the Gemara says in Baba Basra, ein lecha adam, there's no person who is not nichshal in lashon hara. It's very hard for us to really speak carefully and to talk about the things that we're supposed to speak about and to ignore the things that are not our business. It's a very, very difficult challenge. Says the Rambam, if you get into that cycle, you never know where that leads. And it's very hard to break away. Then he says, a bal chema, somebody who has anger management issues. It's a big problem. And we know many people who do. And the Rambam says, if you don't do something to work on your anger, if you don't do something to learn how to behave in the way that you're supposed to, you'll just continue on in that cycle of negativity, in that cycle of anger, and it will play itself out in many negative situations. Then the Rambam says, Hamischaber l'Rasha. One of those great challenges that we have to break away from is when we have friends who make negative impressions on us. And the Rambam says, it is such a great challenge to pull away from that. How do we know that that's a great challenge? Just think no further than Avraham Avinu. We know that Avraham Avinu was given 10 different nisyonos, 10 different tests. We assume that the 10 tests that he were given were real nisyonos, were real challenges, such as the death of his wife Sarah, right after he went ahead and did the Akedas Yitzchak. He has real challenges in his life. But what was the very first nisayon? The very first instruction that he was given was, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha. Let me see, Avraham Avinu, do you have the strength, do you have the fortitude to step away from all that you're used to walk away from it because you know it's wrong? And that was a tremendous challenge on the level of Akedas Yitzchak. It's in the same list of 10. Avraham Avinu was challenged. You have the ability to walk away, to have the strength, to do the right thing when you know everyone around you is not doing that. So we have friends. We have friends. I was inspired but sad at the same time when this happened. We have friends who often go away on vacation with a whole group of their friends who we don't know. And they've been doing this for years. They've all been going away together for years. This past year, this particular couple said, you know, our group of friends has gotten to a new low, and they're going on a vacation that is completely inappropriate for a religious group of couples to be going on. And they described to us where they were going and what they were planning to do, and I do agree with them. It was completely inappropriate for a group of religious couples to be going to this place and doing those activities. Now, this couple decided we can no longer go along with this group. And they pulled out. Immediately, the group that normally had, I guess, a WhatsApp group altogether created a new group without them in order that they should be able to talk about those friends, I guess. And this couple was having such a difficult time dealing with their decision. And they came to us and they said, we know we made the right decision. We know we don't belong there. We know we don't want to be there. And we know it's not worth leaving our children home to go there. And they could not live with the decision that they had made. It was so difficult for them. But I was inspired by the fact that they actually stuck with the decision. But at the same time, it was extremely difficult. And we watched them struggle with it. And I was proud to count people like that among my friends. People who are strong enough to step away when they know there's something happening.
Did you tell them?
That what?
Did
of course I did. We had them for Shabbos. When all of their friends were going there, we had them for Shabbos, yes. And nobody knows who it is because we have people every Shabbos. So nobody knows who I'm talking about. But anyway, I was inspired by the fact that when you struggle with something, and it's a difficult decision for you because you know that the people around you are doing something that is categorically wrong, and you're able to stand up and make the right decision. It takes a lot of strength. It takes a tremendous amount of courage. And it's more difficult for us than we may have thought. So if we have any people here who daven in Esh Kodesh, you're well aware of the Sefer Chovas HaTalmidim, I assume. The Esh Kodesh wrote a few Svarim. One of his Svarim is Chovas HaTalmidim. Chovas HaTalmidim is a book that the Esh Kodesh wrote, which is supposed to be an instruction manual for students, for young children. And in there he writes the following. Oy vavoy la'ish kazeh. You can read on the top of the second side, number Zayin. Oy vavoy la'ish kazeh asur masar es nafsho v'gufo b'rshus v'das anashim acherim nishchasim. He says how terrible it is that we give ourselves over, that we become so dependent on the ideas of other people, and we're so subordinate, we're so vulnerable to the social norms of whatever community we associate with. And that community can mean the parent body of a school, it can be the people we associate with in a shul, it can be many different things. It can mean many, many different things in our lives. We have many different circles and spheres of friends that we pick up along the way. And writes the Chovas HaTalmidim, Kocham Moshlim Alav, everyone else's opinions formulate the way you think. And he says, Hayelad Bikatnuso, how does a young child learn how to live life? They're inquisitive, they're curious, they're analytical, they watch what everybody else does, and they do the same. So sometimes a young child will see a policeman, and then they decide, I also want to be a policeman. So they start dressing up like a policeman. And sometimes they see a fireman, and sometimes they see all kinds of different things, and that's the way they learn to behave, because they look at what other people are doing, and they want to do the same. That's the way children develop. Says the Chovas HaTalmidim, it's not only the way children develop, it's often the way adults develop as well. And the problem is that with adults, they don't realize that they're being, you can't say taken advantage of, but that they're being robbed of the opportunity to think for themselves. How sad is that, he says. How sad is it that we never get out of the childish mentality? This is the way children think, that they look around at what other people are doing and they want to fit in and they do the same. But says the Chovas HaTalmidim, when we become adults and we mature and we learn to think on our own, part of thinking on your own is that you have to sometimes be willing to break away from whatever the societal norm around you considers to be normal. because it's so abnormal, it's so insane. And that's a very difficult challenge, and it's very hard for us. But that really is the way human life needs to be lived. Sometimes we need to take a step back, and that's what we began with. The Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim, as we said, every once in a while, as connected as we are with society, every once in a while it's important for us to take a step back and learn to do some hisbodedus. It doesn't mean you go into the forest and you start screaming at the trees. You don't have to be a fanatic. It means, says the Ramchal, taking time alone for yourself just to think and reconsider where your life is up to, where it's going, where we're coming from, what are we doing, what are we trying to accomplish? Am I involved in things that make sense and are good for me? Or am I getting so lost in all the craziness of life and society? That, says the Ramchal, is such a critical aspect of living life, the way life should be lived. And that is so important. So one of the commentaries on Mishnayos, for those who remember, we started with a Mishnah. The Mishnah writes, Al tischaber l'rasha, harachek mishachein ra, stay away from evil people. Stay away from people who are going to have a negative influence on you. Now one of the commentaries on Mishnayos, the Tosfos Yom Tov, points out that this is a troubling statement because Chazal tell us that Aaron HaKohen, the brother of Moshe Rabbeinu, spent a lot of his time, I guess we should say, in the gutter. Aaron HaKohen spent time with a lot of the lower echelons of society. And we're told in the Medrash that he used to make peace between people who were fighting, and he used to go and try to inspire people who were just, whatever they were doing, they were involved in all kinds of negative things. Aaron spent time with a lot of these people. Moshe Rabbeinu was busy leading, Aaron HaKohen was leading in his way. And he was going around, really working on all the different groups, all the different people. So one of the commentaries asks, what right did he have to do that? Wasn't he concerned that he would be negatively influenced by these people? Don't we have to have such a concern? And the truth is, it's a very penetrating question. Because there are times when perhaps l'shem shamayim, we get involved with people who we know are not living the kind of lives that we want to live, but we feel we'll be able to have an impression on them. We feel we'll be able to really impress upon them the values that we uphold, that we stand for. And the question is, do we have a right to do that? Or perhaps not. That is discussed in the Tosfos Yom Tov. What I find more fascinating is that over the last 150 years or so, I'm not going to read this last paragraph, you can read it on your own, number Ches, but what I find very fascinating is that over the last 150 years, this has been an ongoing discussion and debate about how to respond to the modern day gift and challenge of Eretz Yisrael. And this is what we call a machlokas l'shem shamayim. Both sides of this argument, of this dispute, have very credible arguments. And I think it's a very fascinating discussion that they had. Those who started off with the Zionist movement were not Shomrei Shabbos. Many of them were atheists. They didn't keep kashrus. They didn't uphold any of the standards of what a religious Jew should be living by. All they did was establish a state of Israel, which should not be taken away from them. That's a tremendous accomplishment. But the debate always has been and continues to be, should we as a religious community have shituf pu'ula with them? Should we join forces with those people who might very well be a negative influence on us? And the standards of life that they uphold are not at all the standards of life that we would want for our community. Should we do that? Or perhaps should we say, we have to stay away from this? This has been an ongoing challenge and an ongoing debate. And it's been debated by the great thinkers and the great leaders of our generation for the last 150 years. So one of those people who weighed in on the issue was a great tzaddik by the name of Rabbi Yisachar Teichtal. Rabbi Yisachar Teichtal is an amazing personality. He was actually killed in the Holocaust on January 24th, 1945. So he made it almost till the end of the war. And he was killed on a transport from Auschwitz to another camp. So he really made it almost through the end of the war. But what's amazing about his story is that he was a Hungarian rabbi who wrote many Shalos HaTshuvos. It's called Mishnah Sachir. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was very well known. And he originated from a community where they were very against the establishment of the State of Israel. They were very anti-Zionist at the time. Now, obviously, this happened before 1948, but this is when all the rumblings of the possibility to go to Eretz Yisrael were beginning, in the 1800s, 1900s. And he came from that community where they believed that we should have no part in this at all. And as the war went on, he said he learned from his experiences how wrong that perspective was. And he wrote an amazing sefer where he became basically the greatest advocate for our religious involvement in all that goes on in Eretz Yisrael, and to push the Jewish community from all over Europe that they should all be migrating, they should all be going to move to Eretz Yisrael. And it's an amazing transformation. And you watch in the sefer how it happens. It's a book that's been written in Hebrew, Eim HaBanim Semecha. It's a book that's subsequently been translated into English in the last few years. If you don't have it, it's worth purchasing. It's an amazing book, Eim HaBanim Semecha by Rabbi Sachar Teichtal. It gives you a real sense of appreciation for what Eretz Yisrael is all about. And in that book, he gets into a chapter in Perek Shlishi, he gets into a whole discussion about this very point. What do we do? How do we balance? On the one hand, the Mishnah says, stay away from people who are going to impact you negatively. On the other hand, he says, if we as a religious community are not going to take part and somehow contribute to the decision-making process in our beloved land of Eretz Yisrael, we're just going to leave it up to everybody else to do? What's going to be with our land? So he says, if we would give the option that we won't be involved, and in response, they too will not be involved, then he says, maybe there's what to discuss. But if those people who are really pushing for the establishment of the State of Israel are going to move ahead with their plan anyway, which obviously they did, and we are just going to be left on the outside and have no influence at all and have no impact on all that goes on, he believes, now again this is very debatable, but he believes that that is a major mistake. That is a major mistake. We cannot leave it in the hands of others. And even though it means sometimes our hands are going to get dirty, maybe our standard is going to be lowered in some way, but he says we cannot just allow for this to go on by itself. We need to be contributing members of all that goes on in our beloved country, in our beloved land of Eretz Yisrael, in order to make some kind of impression on the decisions that are made in that community. That's a very fascinating discussion, and as we said, it's an amazing debate that's been ongoing for many, many generations, for many, many years. And it's something that we haven't really gotten a good answer to, because there are credible sides to both sides of the argument. And I think there were great people on both sides of the spectrum that had very important arguments to say about this very important issue as well. That being said, I think that our Mishnah gives us enough to think about. And when our Mishnah does that, what we're being taught here is that it's important to choose wisely. It's important to reevaluate every so often. Sometimes we chose the right friends, but our friends over time develop and change as human beings and as adults. Their perspectives change, and that means all of our perspectives together change as well. And the Mishnah says we always need to be involved in this reevaluation. We always need to ask ourselves, are we positioning ourselves, are we aligning ourselves with the right kind of influence, with the right kinds of people? And are we going to have the strength when the times call for it? Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha. Yes, these have been your friends for many, many years. You've gone on so many vacations together. You have so many shared memories. Your children went to school together and you did so many wonderful things over the course of life. But at some point, maybe it's time for a person to say, Lech lecha me'artzecha, if it's not good for me, if it's pulling my family down, if it's influencing us in a negative way, I need to have the strength, like Avraham Avinu did, to pull myself out of it and to reevaluate and reassess who my real friends are and who really is good for my family to be spending time with and associating with. So Amir Tashem, next week we will continue. Until then, I wish everyone a wonderful day.
Rabbi,
yes.
Interesting way.